This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
If you've never seen Saturn through a telescope, I mean, this isn't the year to do it because the rings are almost edge on. But if you ever get a chance and start next year or anytime soon, take it. Go look at Saturn through a telescope. It is amazing. It's this tiny, perfect jewel.
That voice you hear is Phil Plates, who goes by the moniker of Bad Astronomer. But it's not because he's done anything bad.
No, he actually says he was debunking what he considered to be bad astronomy. So people took to calling him the bad astronomer. Got it?
Some people say, well, it's like, you know, bad like good. And it's like, no, it's bad like bad. But it's just, it's not an adjective modifying astronomer. It's more like an astronomer who studies things that are bad.
Bet you didn't think we were going to get a grammar lesson during this episode about space.
How about the lit astronomer or the dope astronomer? Trying to bring it into the present.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm Mike Rogers with producer Chris Blake, and this week on Something Offbeat, I spoke with the bad, as in bad, astronomer Phil Plate about an optical effect that takes place every 13 to 15 years, Saturn's rings appearing to disappear. Tell me how this works.
Well, there are two ways Saturn's rings are disappearing, maybe. One is that they may actually be disappearing, eroding away and dissolving. And that's something that takes a long time. We don't really know how old Saturn's rings are. They may be as young as 100 to 150 million years, which is, you know, it's a long time for humans, but the planets are 4.5 billion years old, so that's not very long. And we think that it's possible that they're getting bombarded. Well, we know they're getting bombarded by little tiny bits of rock called micrometeorites. And these things hit the rings and erode them away. And the problem is we don't really know how fast that erosion is going. There's one way to look at it, that the rings may be gone in a couple hundred million years. And there's another way that says the erosion isn't happening that quickly. They may last for a lot longer. So, you know, either way, they're going to be around for your lifetime, so you don't have to worry about it.
This is something a lot simpler, though. It has to do with the angle of the planet as far as we're looking at it.
Right. And so the second way that they can disappear is basically, I wouldn't call it an optical illusion, but it's an optical effect. Saturn's rings are incredibly wide, circling that planet. From end to end, if you were to put one end at the Earth, the other end would stretch about two-thirds of the way to the Moon. So these are huge, huge structures, but they're incredibly thin. Their thickness is only about a kilometer, about a half a mile in most places. And so from far away, even though they're very broad, if you look at them edge on, they disappear. They're literally thinner than a sheet of paper to scale. If you took a piece of paper and made it as big as Saturn's rings, the paper would be thicker. So they're very, very thin, and we're watching them from about a billion miles away.
Are we talking about the width of the rings?
Yeah, from end to end. If the rings are actually orbiting Saturn in a circle. If you were to look straight down on Saturn, the rings would be a circular disc, like an old style vinyl record kind of. And so you're talking about from end to end, the size of them. And the thickness would be the vertical height, and that's what's incredibly thin. And there are thousands of rings. They're broken up into like five or six main sections, depending on their characteristics. And then inside each section are thousands of rings and gaps as well, places where there are no rings. So there's a pretty complicated, sophisticated thing going on around Saturn.
Mike, I've got to pause it here. These numbers are absurd if you stop and really think about them. The rings are thinner than the edge of a piece of paper from where we stand, which we are both holding in our hands right now. How can we even see anything from a billion miles away?
It really is fascinating. This is one of the reasons why I've always loved these kinds of stories.
Do you have a favorite space-related story you've covered in your career?
Oh my gosh, there's so many of them. You can just pick one. Remember, we had the eclipse last year. We were right in the path of totality. You've got this planetary alignment that's going on right now. That's kind of cool. The big asteroid headed to Earth.
Although I was pleased to see yesterday that they took the chances of that collision down to very minimal.
That's right. It was under 1% now.
So hopefully we're in the clear.
I hope.
But it's been proven in the numbers for something offbeat too, not to get too into the weeds. But we realized pretty early on that listeners are just drawn to these kinds of stories. Our episodes about UFOs have been some of my favorites.
Saturn is tilted as it orbits the sun, just like the Earth is tilted. You look at a globe of the Earth, and it's tilted by about 23 degrees. Saturn is tilted by about the same amount. So as it orbits the sun, takes about 29, 30 years to do that, twice every time it orbits the sun, so roughly every 15 years, the rings appear to be more or less edge on to us. And this actually happens twice in a year because the Earth's orbit is tilted. There's a lot of geometry going on. So the Earth passes through the ring plane twice in a year, every 15 years. So this is the year. And we're passing through them in March for the first time. And the problem is Saturn's too close to the sun to see it. It's on the other side of the sun. If you tried to point a telescope at it, you'd be looking at it during the day. It's not going to do you much good. However, in November, it's going to happen again, and Earth will get very close to passing through the ring plane, which means we'll be seeing those rings edge on.
What are the rings made of?
Water ice. How about that?
That's easy.
Yeah, that was a big mystery. Galileo was one of the first people, if not the first, to see the rings through his terrible little telescope that he made in the 1600s. And then over the next couple of centuries, as astronomers built bigger and better telescopes, they're like, what are these things? They don't seem to touch the planet. They can't be solid, because if they were solid, they would tear themselves apart as they orbited Saturn. Maybe they're a fluid. It turns out, no. And then eventually, we figured out that they're made of countless chunks of ice, water, frozen water, water ice. Most of them are very, very small. And that's the other weird thing, is that these rings are so huge, they completely dwarf our entire planet. And yet, they're made up of chunks of ice, probably none of which are bigger than a couple of meters across, the size of a small car. And that's because they're constantly bumping into each other and grinding themselves down. If you were to go there and look at Saturn's rings, they wouldn't look like, you know, ice cubes or jagged chunks of rock. They would probably be irregularly shaped, but very smooth, ground down to a smooth finish because of all those little collisions.
So what holds them all on that same plane? What keeps them from, prevents them from just floating off into space?
Well, that's complicated. We have, what, 2 hours for me to go?
Okay, never mind.
A standard joke for me, because everything in astronomy is complicated and takes forever to explain carefully. Well, of course, Saturn's gravity is holding them in place. Saturn is a very large, massive planet. It has a very powerful gravitational field. That's what holds them orbiting the planet. That's why they don't just fly away. The reason they're flat, there are a lot of reasons for it, but the main one is that Saturn isn't a sphere. It's round, but it's flattened a little bit. It's what we call an oblate spheroid. I love science terms, math terms.
You're just showing off.
Yeah, I know, but it's a fun thing to say, an oblate spheroid.
You know, in news, we're taught to write to a, quote, digestible level of comprehension. I don't think that qualifies, but go ahead.
Think of it like a beach ball that somebody is sitting on. So it's not a sphere. It's flattened through the poles and bulging out at the equator. And if you had a ring particle that was trying to orbit at an angle, that bulge that Saturn has as it is at its equator has gravity and will eventually pull that ring particle down to orbit over the equator. And also, if you had a bunch of them orbiting every which way, they would collide with each other. And over time, that would tend to flatten the ring out. And then the bulge of Saturn is what really makes them so thin.
Do we know what the reaction was when Galileo made this discovery? Was it kind of like when he suggested that the Earth was not the center of the universe? And the powers that be were a little upset with him?
I don't think it made that big of a splash, because that was a pretty big splash. But with Saturn, he wasn't sure what he was seeing. Remember, his telescope wasn't very big, and Saturn's it's a big planet, but it's really far away. So through a telescope, it looks kind of small. And he described it as Saturn having ears. And he drew a little picture of Saturn as sort of this round disk with these two smaller disks on either side of it, one on either side. And it wasn't until much later that the better telescopes gave us a better idea of what was going on. And I'll note that as Galileo observed Saturn, the rings at one point were tilted toward us and he could see them better. At other times they were edge on and they disappeared. And so people really had no idea what was going on with that for a while.
So this thing with Saturn happens this month, and then it will happen again in November. I know you enjoy this kind of stuff, so will you find a way to go see it?
I probably will. Because how much effort is really involved here? You just step out into the front yard with a pair of binoculars.
Unless you can't find a high-powered enough pair.
Well, there's that.
I don't know what it says about me, but these kind of extraterrestrial things don't always do it for me.
You know, you millennials, if you just tear yourself away from your poke bowl and your Dawson's Creek marathon and step outside and behold the majesty of the cosmos, might do you some good.
I don't know if I would go with poke bowl or Dawson's Creek, but maybe some avocado toast and scrubs or friends, then I'm in.
See, you're proving my point.
You wrote last month that even with all of the new technology and the advances we've made, that the rings still pose, you said, fundamental mysteries. Why is that?
Well, we don't know how they formed. It's not clear. It could have been that Saturn has a lot of icy moons, Mimas and Enceladus. These are moons that are a few hundred miles across, and they're mostly made of ice. And it's possible that two moons collided and shattered and blasted out all this material that would pretty rapidly form a ring. And it turns out, even though the rings are so huge, if you were to gather them up and sort of lump them up into a ball, yeah, they'd be about the size of a small moon. They wouldn't be that big at all. But we're not sure. It might have been a comet, a large object that came in from the outer solar system, even out past Neptune. There's a ton of icy bodies out there that could have come in and broken up or might have smashed into the moon. We don't know. And again, we don't know when it happened. The rings may have formed early on and Saturn's had them for billions of years. Or it may be, if they are eroding away as quickly as some people think, that they weren't even around when the dinosaurs were still walking around on Earth.
Do they have a function, or are they just there to look pretty?
They're just there. I mean, they're not there to look pretty. They are there and they look pretty. I'd say that. Okay. But it's like anything, you know, we're just talking about physical processes, things that happen. And now they exist and they're gorgeous and they don't have to be there. I mean, it was a weird event that made them in the first place. And if it hadn't been an icy object that shattered, if it had been a rocky object, they'd look a lot darker. They wouldn't look nearly as spectacular as they do. So, you know, it's pretty nice that we've got this ridiculous thing to look at in our solar system.
My question is, when do we get rings? Is the Earth ever going to have rings?
Well, we kind of do with all the satellites we're launching. but it's possible. If some object were to, you know, a gigantic asteroid were to come in and smash into the moon, we could get rings. It's very likely that when the moon formed, we had rings, that a planet, a smaller planet than Earth, and something about the size of Mars, collided with Earth. We're not exactly sure when, but less than 100 million years after Earth formed, and blew off all this material into space, that would have very quickly flattened out to form a ring and then coalesced into the moon. And there are details of this that astronomers argue about, but that's more or less the story. So for some time, not very long, like a century, Earth had rings before all that material coalesced and formed the moon as we know it today.
I'm Mike Rogers. Thanks so much for listening to Something Off Beats. This episode written and produced by Lauren Berry and Chris Blake. Audio editing by Chris Blake and original music by Myron Kaplan. And to keep listening, please subscribe to us on the Odyssey app, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have your own offbeat story that you think we should cover, let us know about it. You can send it to us at somethingoffbeat@odyssey.com.